welcome to the Gooder Podcast. As partner and CMO of Retail Voodoo, an award-winning branding agency, I have met and worked with some of the most amazing women in the naturals industry, food, beverage, wellness, fitness. And as such, I decided to create the Gooder Podcast to interview these great people and subject matter experts, have them share their insights and expertise to help businesses all around the world become gooder. Today, we get to have a special guest on, Jennifer Norman, and I'm really excited to talk a little bit more about Ikigai. We're going to talk about leading a brand through the lens of Ikigai, but before we get into it too much, I want to tell you a little bit about her. Jennifer Norman is the founder of the Human Beauty Movement. It's an award-winning author of The Adventures of Super Captain Brave Man children's book series. Ooh, let's talk about that later. After receiving her MBA from Georgetown University, she went on to pursue a 20-year career in beauty, fashion, and natural industries, working for companies like L'Oreal, Victoria's Secret, Neutrogena, and Derma-E. That's how we know each other. As an adoptee and a special needs mom, Jennifer realizes that her life's work is about inspiring compassion. She has decided to make it her purpose to foster inclusivity and support others with wellness, kindness, inspiration, and trust. Welcome, Jennifer. Thanks for being here today.
And it is such a pleasure to be here. I love being gooder with you.
Thank you. It is, I got to tell you, the name comes from a friend of mine that I've known for 20 years, and it's an old drinking word that we used to use all the time, and it's kind of like found its way into my everyday life, so here it is.
Oh, is it like a certain kind of tequila is good, but the
well, it's like after a couple of, so he and I used to drink some whiskey together. We were whiskey drinkers. And after the second one, we started talking about, instead of how great things were, we talked about how much gooder they were than other things. And it just, there you go.
I like that better than what I used to say, which was, you know, that's not terrible. Yeah. So it's better to be gooder than not terrible.
I'll take that. Mm-hmm. I'll take that for sure. Thank you. Yeah. It has such a good memory for me, but we can share that over a glass of wine sometime, perhaps next time we get to see each other in person.
I know. I feel like, you know, at least on Zoom, we don't have to wear the masks. We can see each other's faces, but we are so apart, aren't we?
Yes, I know it.
Yeah. I'm actually in Topanga, Los Angeles, California.
Oh my goodness.
So, yeah. We're a bit of a distance away.
Yeah. Are you on the hill? Are you up top?
I'm on the top of the hill.
All right. I've been there a few times. The views are stunning. I love that area.
Especially when you're drinking whiskey.
I'll have to check that out. I'll be expecting my invitation. That's so funny. Well, so I started investigating a little bit more about you. I mean, I knew you from our time together. And then, of course, we've talked about projects here and there since your time at Derma-E, but I get to know you a little bit in a different way as I was learning more about you to have you on this podcast. And there were so many different things that I could say, oh, let's talk about this, let's talk about this. And so I feel like we're going to try to cover a lot today. So before we get into all the gooder stuff, let's start with the good stuff. And that is, you know, tell us a little bit about you. I mean, those that have read your website and know a little bit about your background already know, but for people who don't know Jennifer Norman, what is it that, who are you and how did you get here? You know, this, where did you find, how's your path to here become?
I appreciate you asking the question, and I'm always happy to share my story. And I usually start from the beginning because I think that's the most authentic place to begin. And that was that, you know, when I was a baby, I was actually an abandoned child. And I always say, well, my life could have stopped there. My life could have been so different. I could have died. I could have very easily just been left on the streets. But because of the compassion of some people that found me and took me in, and then ultimately brought me to an orphanage, I was able to be put up for adoption. And I was adopted from South Korea long, long time ago by a wonderful family that lived in New York. And so there I was at 2 years old, starting a brand new life with a new family. Mom was British, dad was Caucasian, or I'm from the Bronx, and they already had 3 children, but they wanted to save more children in the world. They just had such a good-hearted nature about them. And then after I was adopted, they adopted 2 more children.
Wow, big family.
From Vietnam. And so we were just a hodgepodge, wonderful, crazy family, and grew up. After that, I think that, a lot of adoptee kids go through this period of trying to figure out who the heck they are. You're kind of thrown, and it's not something that a lot of other people can really understand as much, I think. But, there is this whole identity crisis. Nobody else here looks like me. I'm being teased and bullied for how I look because, growing up in a very Caucasian area, you just feel different, everything about you, and a lot of your inherent intuition is from another place, and you're not really understanding what's going on inside you. And so, growing up, very kind of normal, typical middle-class American life, I was provided everything that I could have ever wanted as a child, but yet there was still, you grow up with just this sense of low self-esteem and just feeling like I should be doing more. I'm not really living the life that I should. I really feel like I need to do more. And so I developed this very strong competitive nature. I started doing dance class, art class, piano lessons, accelerated in school, joined just about every club that I could, and just busied myself with everything, trying to kind of see what, almost like a wardrobe, seeing what fit. Ultimately, after going to college, getting my MBA, I found myself gravitating toward the beauty industry. I think it's because I did have somewhat of an artistic background, and I liked the idea of aesthetics and the makeup and the fashion, and I kind of gravitated towards the creative side. So interestingly enough, I started a 20-year career in the beauty industry, which essentially morphed into me escalating in different roles. And, also being kind of, responsible for the marketing of these particular brands, but also realizing the detriment of the marketing of the brands. And so if you think about back in the day where beauty was all about supermodels and you had to be stick thin, and I actually worked for Victoria's Secret for a period of time, and we all know what that marketing looks like.
Yeah.
And so from a superficial and from a sensationalist standpoint, you really think, oh gosh, this is I've made the big time, this is really what life is about. But then you recognize, gosh, doesn't it seem shallow? It just seems like there's got to be more to life than this. And so ultimately, I think that I found a little bit of respite in the natural industry because it was more about the ethics. It was more about trying to do things in a better way rather than harming people. And so that started a foray into this idea of more conscientiousness in general. And fast forwarding to the point where I actually had my first son, my first and only child, he was actually diagnosed with a very rare genetic disorder at the age of 2, ironically. We all had these life-changing moments at the age of 2. He almost didn't make it. He almost lost his life many times and fought through, and we were able to keep him supported through a number of different modalities. So I started to study health and wellness and vitamins and antioxidants and CBD and a lot of the things that are considered more alternative medicine or more holistic types of modalities, Reiki and energy healing and body work and all of that stuff, as well as Western medicine, things that he needed for seizures and things that he needed for regulate his body. Today, my son is 14 years old and he's a survivor. And so I always say I first and foremost am a special needs mom, and I really feel that he has given me kind of this conduit into a greater sense of what our purpose here is in life, which is about love and health and wellness and being compassionate towards each other. And so really, I think that I found my life's calling through a series of steps and iterations in my life, from the time that I was adopted to going into the beauty industry to discovering conscientiousness, and then also with raising my son. And you know, he's highly susceptible. He's one of those immunocompromised kids that I have to be very careful about with COVID right now. Mm-hmm. And so, we understand, and we're of the camp that, there are things that happen in this world that may seem beyond our control, but they're all life lessons. I really look at everything about, this is going to make us stronger. This mm-hmm. is teaching us something, and this is something to be grateful for as we're going through it. So in the last year, I decided to start the Human Beauty Movement really as a culmination of all of that. It was really to focus on radical inclusion. You know, it's not about the skin color that you have, as we're seeing now. This is so, so important. It's not about what your race is. It's not about your age. It's not about your sex or your gender or who you love. It's not about your abilities. It's really giving everybody the equal opportunity to be able to be well and to understand that they are beautiful, inside and out. And I want to be able to help shine that light to help more people recognize that beauty. And it's a movement. I like to kind of think about it as not necessarily the old stodgy corporation, because I think the idea of the monolithic corporation is kind of a dinosaur right now. Mm-hmm. It's really all about human to human touch points, about us communicating and being able to see each other truly. And for me, as a human, to do my best to help another person in the world be the best human that they can be.
Mm-hmm. How did, I think you're answering a lot of the questions that why is the Human Beauty Movement, like, why is it important for you now, and why is now the right time? I think you already have answered that, but in the context of what's happening within our society right now, it's very interesting. How has what been happening, like with the BLM movement, has that had any influence? Is it accelerating you? Is it giving you a different perspective? Do you feel like you are able to help be that agent of change for certain people? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I will say that you're exactly right. When I first started this, it was really that I wanted to build a better beauty company. That was really like the initial thought. Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, things evolve as you recognize the importance of what you're doing. And I don't know if I even realized the importance of what I was doing back when I first conceived of it, which was, you know, beauty and wellness for all. You know, it was really just, you know, thinking that that was something where I could put my stake in the ground and be as authentic to who I am as a person, and with my story, be able to project what I felt was important. But then over time, understanding what COVID has done as far as people really starting to understand, wow, a lot of these petty things that I used to care about, a lot of the things that used to be important and I used to stress out over, those really weren't things that I needed to stress out over. This is something to stress out over. It's like, you know, is my family going to be safe? Am I going to be healthy? Yeah. Am I going to have a living? And like, it really just boils things down on the Maslow hierarchy, if we can get a sense about it. And we're all kind of taken to a very base level of just trying to survive. Mm-hmm. And so with Black Lives Matter, absolutely. And it was interesting because, you know, as part of my movement, I decided to start a book, to write a book. And I started writing this book in March, before Black Lives Matter, before George Floyd, before the whole Amy Cooper incident, before this all began. But the book was essentially based on the fact that, you know, we are judged by the way that we look from the outside, you know, what our skin color is, whether we're Asian or not, whether or not we wear a certain fashion, you know, people will cast judgments on us. And what that does to us from a mental wellness perspective, from a self-esteem perspective. And so I really felt that that was important to kind of get into a book and then write about what I had done over time to try to overcome those particular self-esteem issues, those judgments, and really try to, you know, kind of muster up the strength that I had from within. And I thought that that would be helpful to share with others. Then Black Lives Matter happened and I was like, oh my gosh, this could not be more urgent or more timely.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so the book is called You Are Beautiful, The Guide to Happiness When Life Falls Apart. And it's in editing right now, but I'm hoping to get it published soon. But as far as the human beauty movement goes, I all of a sudden, almost with every day that has been passing in 2020, have recognized that this is something that is important. Mm-hmm. It is something that I'm hoping that once people hear about, that they will be able to align with, be part of the conversation, support. And right now, you know, we're starting small, but we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, I've got my website, and we're starting a YouTube channel as well.
Good.
But it's really all grounded in a spirit of benevolency. And I hope that people do understand the truthfulness behind that, because I think that there are a lot of companies, you know, the whitewashers and the greenwashers, we've all seen them in the natural industry, which are doing it because they think it's going to be lucrative for them.
Right.
They think the market is there and they think that this is the way that I'm going to make money, because the natural industry is booming, the ethical industry is booming. But truly, you know, I'm in this for the long haul. I set up the Human Beauty Movement as a benefit corporation, I'm going through the corporation certification, which is essentially very stringent criteria to make sure that you're delivering back to society a benefit that is equal, if not more important than your financial model.
Right.
And so never will a decision be made for the short-term gain. Never will I say, if I cut this corner, then I will make more money in the short run and I'll be able to deliver on this projection. That's not even as important as saying, am I doing the right thing? Is this going to help the consumer? Is this honest? Is this truthful? Is this the best thing that I can do? And make sure that I'm giving back not only to the consumer, but also to the planet.
So is that what you're trying to accomplish with the human beauty movement?
I kind of think about the human beauty movement as a way to help people really work on themselves from within. It's not about trying to find a lot of external factors in order to complete you. It's really all about really trying to help build up that person and their feelings of self-esteem and self-worth and self-empowerment from within, and doing things in the right way. And so being mindful about sustainability and ecological regeneration, being mindful about the companies that I support with my supply chain and making sure that they're giving their people fair wages and that they have, you know, good practices as far as, you know, hiring for diversity. I literally am a pain in the butt with all of my suppliers because I ask them a million questions to make sure that, because I want to make sure that the economy is propagated by good company, not ones that are going to be shortchanging people or the planet. And so I think the more that other companies can sign on and do this, then we will end up in a more sustainable place in the long run for our kids and their kids.
Right. Well, yeah, I think everybody on the planet is getting a little bit of a lesson in how supply chain, like just how and where we get our stuff, whether it's food or TVs or whatever, how profits have created, I mean, that's part of the reason why we have this illness going on, is because, and why the economy is getting so impacted. So really, I like your perspective around B Corp. We ourselves are just, you know, we're one step away from that. So I can appreciate the work that goes into going through the B Corp certification. It's pretty rigorous.
Yes. And I think it's one that has such high regard for a reason, because they do the vetting, they do the auditing, they make sure that it's not just a certification for sale.
Right.
That a lot of,
you're going to walk the walk, not just talk the talk.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, so I feel like this is a little bit of a natural transition. I have done a little bit of work or a little bit of research on Ikigai. And from what I understand, a lot of what you're already talking about seems influenced by that mindset, or maybe it's, you know, which comes first, I'm not quite sure, but Let's talk about Ikigai. Can you share what it is in a simple way, why you've adopted it, and how you're growing your business and coaching people through it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say that I've only stumbled across the concept of Ikigai this year. So the human beauty movement actually predates that.
Okay.
But I think that once I discovered the concept of Ikigai, I found it extremely practical and helpful. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that it would be helpful from just a mentorship standpoint to share it with as many people as I possibly could, so that it might, you know, in turn help those people as well. And in doing that, what I actually put together are just a couple of slides. If you don't mind, I'm actually going to share them.
Yeah, feel free.
You and your podcast audience. And because I think that it's probably easier illustrated rather than me just kind of talking about it.
Perfect.
And so the you pronounced it correctly. Ikigai is pronounced like with a smile. Iki and gai.
Okay.
And this is a word that actually came out of Okinawa. And it was the concept of Ikigai was discovered because Okinawans have the highest concentration of Centaurians on the planet. There are more people that are happy and feeling fulfilled in their lives and living well past 100. And so all of a sudden they became the focus of a lot of study. And so the concept of Ikigai was one of those things that actually came out of studying the Okinawan culture and the way of life in this part of Japan. And so essentially Ikigai is this, the joining of two words, which doesn't translate perfectly well in English, but essentially Iki is to live, or it's your reason to live, and then gai is your reason for being. Mm-hmm. And so I boil it down to Ikigai being your life's work. Now, a lot of people will debate about whether or not Ikigai is all about your career or whether it's something more. Mm-hmm. I like to think about it more on the fundamental level of career and the work that you do to make a living, because I believe that from a spiritual perspective, our reason for being is so much greater than our work. It's really, you know, more about our purpose of love and light and all of those things. But right now, especially with so many people being displaced because of COVID-19, and you know, for a number of different reasons where, you know, there are college students, you know, coming out and, you know, not having jobs or not being able to know where to go, where to turn, what to do. And so it's, I think that this is helpful to many people just in able to, you know, kind of map out where they could potentially find fulfillment. And so there are four key elements of Ikigai. The first is, you know, what do you love? What do you love doing, or what are the things that you love? And the second one is, what are you good at, or what could you become good at? Mm-hmm. The third is what the world needs. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth is what you can get paid for. And so when you combine all of these things together, you kind of create this Venn diagram, if you will, and you can see where the shapes are moving. Smack dab in the center is where you're going to find Ikigai. And so it is the intersection of what you love, what you're good at, what the world needs, and what you can get paid for. And so what happens is that some people will be, you know, focusing more on one or two of these things, maybe three if they're lucky, but very seldom do you get to all four or recognize and realize that you're getting to all four. And so I just wanted to kind of walk through what happens when that occurs.
Okay.
And so the first thing, is that if you are able to find what you love and what you're good at, we call that a passion. It's like, I have a passion for sewing, or I have a passion for music, or I have a passion for art, I have a passion for this. But you may not necessarily be getting paid for that, and it might not necessarily be what the world needs. So the key here is, how do I figure out how to make money doing this? Because money is also, it's an element of wellness, because if we're not financially well, then it's hard to be well in other ways, isn't it? And then if you are able to discover what you're good at and then what you can get paid for, we call that a profession. And so, you know, it may not necessarily be what you love or what the world needs, but it's kind of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so the key here is, what can we do to try out new things and find something that you love doing? The next thing is, if you've discovered what the world needs and then what you can get paid for, we call that a vocation. So perhaps that is, you know, you're a nurse, you're a teacher, something to that extent, you know, that the world needs. But there might be a sense of ennui here. You might feel bored, you might feel stale, because it's not really what you love, or maybe not necessarily what you get at. So the thing to do here is to challenge yourself, keep yourself, you know, stimulated, and see if you can start gravitating or pulling in what you love and what you're good at, or turn it into what you love and what you're good at, so that it's more fulfilling. And then lastly, if you've discovered the intersection of what you love and then what the world needs, then you have a mission. And the thing here is that you can get better at this craft so that you can get good at it, and that ultimately, you know, it's something that you can also become paid for. So it's nice to kind of think about these little quadrants here as, you know, different aspects of where you might just intuitively be situated within this Venn diagram, no matter where you are in your career right now. And then you'll notice that there are these little tiny subsets. You're so, so close to your ikigai, but there is this, I've numbered them 1, 2, 3, and 4, because it's like you are just scratching the surface. And unfortunately, some people get so close and then they give up. They have no idea how close they are, and they feel just like, you know, and then they kind of give up right at the finish line. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about these areas, because sometimes people can relate more to the sentiment or the feeling that they have when they're in these spaces, and be able to identify them there. So the first area is, you know, you've got what you love, you've got what you're good at, and you've also got what you can get paid for, but you're missing what the world needs. And so you're satisfied, but you feel useless, because you feel like nobody needs what you want, or, you know, you just feel like there's something, the bigger picture is missing there. So if that's you, that's where you're sitting. And maybe, you know, there's a way to kind of bring back in, like, how the world can use what you have, or, you know, make it more apparent, either through word of mouth or any way of awareness, for people to recognize, and for you to gain that recognition, and for you to actually be able to expand what you're doing to more people. Mm-hmm. So if you feel satisfied, but feeling of uselessness, focus on what the world needs, and then you might get there. Okay, part two, you've got what you love, you've got what you're good at, you've got what the world needs, but you're not getting paid for it. It's the starving artist. And so you feel really good, you love what you're doing, but you're poor, you're broke. So if that's you, you know, finding ways to actually get paid. And it's interesting, sometimes in the conscious community, I find, sometimes in the natural space, some people look at money almost like a dirty word. And I can understand that, because, you know, the love of money, you know, tends to be the root of all evil, but it is a necessary thing within the 3D world, within the life that we're living. And so do not feel, I would say, you know, don't feel shy about declaring your goodness and what your value is. A lot of people just, they're shy about what they're worth. And so that's where this game can be stepped up. And then I jumped to number 4, but this is what you can get paid for, what you're good at, and what the world needs, but you're missing what you love. And so it's like, you know, you feel empty. Some people are really rich, but they feel like, gosh, you know, there's just this hole in their life. They're devoid of love of what they're doing. Yeah. And so, yeah, they're comfortable. They, you know, they've got all the money that they need in the world. And so it's kind of like, what can they do to incorporate what they love? And then 3, the reason why I left this one, even though it's numbered 3, I left this one to last, is that what the world needs, what you love, and what you can get paid for is a really good place to start. Like, if you are a new person just coming out of college, or if you're deciding to start a new career. And if you were thinking about using Ikigai as a tool, this I've discovered is a really, really good place to start. And the reason why is that, number one, it's a fact that more millionaires are made through entrepreneurship than any other way. And the entrepreneur mindset is, what does the world need? What can I bring out that the market is, you know, there's a need gap out in the market that I can fulfill with what I love, what I'm good at, and therefore get paid for it. And so I think that, you know, if you're really looking to try to, you know, to start, it's always helpful to start with what the world needs. Yeah. And then what you can get paid for, because what you're good at is something that you develop over time. These are skills that you are essentially able to perfect and refine. And with the speed with which the world is changing, sometimes skills become obsolete very quickly with technology. Yeah. And so you have to constantly refurbish and renew and replace that. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes almost like a lesson in adaptability, to be able to say, okay, what I was doing before is not going to take me where I want to go. And so, you know, being able to say, gosh, this is a step change in my life. I'm going to have to change something. It might be time to like take a new course. It might be time to kind of DIY and teach yourself something new. There's plenty of opportunities online to like learn a whole new skill or a new profession. And then what we've discovered is that you can fall in love with what you're doing when you become good at it. And so that's why it's kind of like, if you kind of start with what the world needs and go counterclockwise around the curve, that tends to be almost like a shortcut hack to success, if you will.
And so
hopefully that was helpful. Again, Ikigai, you know, what is your life's work? What would you like, you know, to do that would ultimately help you feel the most fulfilled and accomplished with what you're doing? And more, what I'm seeing that the world needs is, you know, more companies that are doing good for good by good. As far as Ikigai and how I've kind of become reflective of using that for a tool of what I'm doing, as far as my Ikigai is inspiring compassion. And so everything that I am doing to focus around beauty, wellness, kindness, inspiration, trust, all of those things that you kind of mentioned at the very beginning is really a result of me being able to find my Ikigai and blaze a path. And yeah, like I said, it's a process. It's not like you discover your Ikigai and boom, you know, everything is happy and wonderful. It is a lifelong journey. It's something that you have to kind of enjoy the ride while you're going through it. You can't like continuously look at, you're like, well, gosh, I'm only here and I'm, you know, I need to get there and I'm giving up because it's just too hard. Yeah. It's enjoying every moment as you go along.
Would you say, there's a couple of things that I saw. First of all, I love that Ikigai does something different than I have seen with other kind of, now granted, I've not seen other, like every philosophy underneath the planet or every kind of just kind of way of being. But what I love about is the acknowledgement of the feelings as part of it, because most other things are very tactical. You do this, this is the outcome. You do this, this is the outcome. Yeah. And the Ikigai incorporates the feelings, because I think that's where most people get hung up. That's when the quitting happens, because they don't know how I'm supposed to feel. Am I supposed to be feeling like I'm making progress? And we all know that change is really hard, and oftentimes the road of change is challenging, like, because you're learning new stuff, you're challenging the way you think about things, the way you feel about things, the way you believe about things. So I'm really inspired by that, and I would love for you to send that over to me, because I would like to introduce it to my team, if that's all right.
I would be more than happy to. And you're right, you know, I think that in business in particular, a lot of times we are taught to put feelings on the wayside. Yeah. You know, it's all about just being very pragmatic, very empirical, very cut and dry. And I think that the world is shifting, and people, and, you know, I often talk about it as like, bring your whole self to work, you know, all of the innards, all the heart, the soul, the emotions, like that is when you can truly be yourself. And I feel like, you know, too many times in the past have people been boxed into corners because they weren't enough this or they weren't enough that, and they didn't fit the mold. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to fit the mold. I want people to feel that they are who they are and that they don't have to. They, you know, the fact that they are uniquely themselves and have these feelings and emotions is so important and vital to their own happiness and their wellness and what they can bring, then bring to the table. And so what happened in the past, and I'm sure it'll continue, but, you know, we'll feel something and we don't really know how to put our finger on it. And so we rationalize why we feel that way.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, well, obviously my, you know, my boss doesn't appreciate me, or my, you know, you kind of feel these things and look for kind of boilerplate reasons as to why you might be unhappy or why you might feel unsettled or dissatisfied and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, let's honor those feelings for what they are. Let's not try to rationalize them, but let's work through them in order to get you to a place where you can kind of get past the, you know, the dark clouds.
Or the other way. I mean, like, there's exciting change too. And sometimes we can let that drive us more, like, oh, I'm excited about this, therefore I need to keep going in that direction. And I think we give feelings so much power, and because they physically impact our body versus rational thinking doesn't make our body feel a particular way, but feelings do, right? And so I really appreciate that Ikigai approach. And what's so interesting to me is we worked on a brand called Loma Linda. And I believe it, and the diet was all based off of Blue Zone. And it's got to be possible that Okinawa must be a Blue Zone. But we looked at the longevity through the lens of diet, but not necessarily philosophy. So it's really fun to see that overlay. Like, it's not just the diet; it's the philosophy and how people approach life. And that the diet is a part of it, but it is not the whole of it.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I've been like studying up a lot on, to your point, nutrition and diet and Ayurveda and, you know, a lot of the things, you know, what are your doshas and whatnot, because I think that these are all very interesting concepts in order to arrive at, you know, self-improvement, frankly.
Yeah.
It's really not to point out, oh, you know, I'm terrible here. I'm terrible. It's really okay. You know, this is the type of body I have. This is the type of sensibility that I have. And these are things that I can work on, and, you know, becoming really in tune with why organic nutrients are important, why superfoods are so important, because these are living things and these are things that you're bringing into your body. And so, even Hindus, a lot of Hindus won't go to a restaurant because they don't know the intention with which the food was cooked, because they believe that energy transfers into the food.
Wow.
And so, they're, you know, depending on the level of your belief system and all of that, and it's a wide range, certainly. Some people don't care and they'll just have, you know, the closest fast food that they want and they'll survive. But, you know, really kind of having more intent and understanding about what you're surrounding yourself, what you're putting in your body, the, you know, the energies or the way that these things make you feel, the music that you're listening to, the people that you're hanging out with, you know, it all has a real impact on your wellness, on your healthfulness, on your outlook and your own feeling about yourself. And then certainly with social media, I often say, you know, there's that dopamine, serotonin aspect of like, oh, how many likes did I get? And then you start getting hungry and feeding on those sorts of egoistic types of feelings, which are more, like I said, it's more physical than really like your true self and your emotions. And so, it can be a little dangerous when you start like taking feelings at face value for, you know, like those impulsive things, or, you know, somebody's made a mean comment and now my life is over and I feel depressed and I, like, my day is shot. And so being able to kind of recognize those highs and lows in between and be able to kind of dismiss what isn't important because they're, they have no basis on you as a person. It's really just people and their own feelings amongst themselves. It becomes a real almost like exercise in navigating the way we're feeling today.
I am. Yeah, that's really great. I'm going to spend a little bit more time learning about that. Now is such a great time for people to be doing this anyways. Things are changing. So like kind of follow the energy if you are able and willing to just kind of go, oh, here's a tool that might be able to help me determine, am I at the right place? Am I doing the things that really bring me joy? Am I doing things that make me happy or are helping my community or my family, whatever? So I love that set of tools. Thank you for sharing that with us.
You're welcome. Yeah, I think about the people who maybe in life were dictated what their occupation was going to be, or even, you know, even beyond that, it's like who they're going to marry, who they're supposed to be, like the type of, and it's like typecasting, and it's not really intrinsically who they are or what they love or what they, you know, what they want. And I feel so, I feel compassion and empathy for those people because, you know, they're living a life that's not their own necessarily. And so the more willing and able that we can be to support others in their quest to the back to themselves, frankly, is, I think, you know, a better way to be.
As so this is a new, this is a kind of a new phase of your life, this Ikigai influence. Have you seen it change the course of the human beauty movement at all? Or do you feel like you actually you're in alignment and you were surprised, or can you marry those up a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely have recognized that the nice thing about being an entrepreneur and not having like this massive company is that it's very easy to adapt. Yeah. And so fortunately, you know, once I discovered Ikigai, which is a personal journey as well as one that is going to kind of shape the way that the human beauty movement interacts with other people and the way that our messaging happens and the way that, you know, we're communicating what our values are. Yeah. You know, there's more incorporation of that. And I think it's truer. I think it's definitely something that I feel very confident is, you know, fundamentally right. Mm-hmm. And it's something that is going to help create more success and sustainability for the company in the long run, because it's founded on real core principles that I believe are going to help make a difference in the world. So yeah, I think that, you know, it started out as, you know, me wanting to find, you know, a way to do the beauty business better. And the way that I've been able to discover that are through these tools and these different elements that I'm able to kind of adapt into.
No, I've been writing notes. That's my new thing now during podcasts is I'm just writing copious notes about everything because I'm learning so much. There's so much that I learn ahead of time and then I learn even more during the call. So that's fun. I have a couple more kind of off Ikigai, off human beauty movement questions that I thought, well, first of all, talk a little bit about Super Captain Brave Man children's book series.
Oh, well, thank you for asking. Yes, I actually, hang on a second, because I have a book like right here on the side because I'm kind of in my office / library here. And I started to write these books about 4 years ago. We've been launching one per year. And these were inspired by my son to essentially help teach kids at an early age about kids with different abilities.
Oh,
and to help normalize the fact that, you know, kids may have physical or neurological differences. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to do it in an entertaining way. And so kind of taking a cue off of the, you know, kind of like our superheroes, we like to think about kids with disabilities as all sorts of superheroes rolled into one. And so that's why we called it The Adventures of Super Captain Brave Man, because he's like all these different superheroes rolled into one. Yeah. And so the sweet part about it is that you actually see the boy in his state, which is like his normal state, which is, you know, he's in a wheelchair, he's got a ventilator, he's got a tracheostomy, he eats with a G-tube. And so automatically your protagonist is somebody that's different, but he recognizes that other kids are treating him differently.
Yeah.
And he wants to find a way to be friends with those kids and to help other kids be friends with kids that aren't the same as them. So when he dreams, he kind of goes into this dream state alter ego, which is the Super Captain Brave Man character, and helps other kids. And interesting, it's kind of like at the end of each of the story, he kind of wakes up and there's like a little hint that what he dreamed is actually true. And so, yeah, there's a little bit of like dreamscaping, supernatural kind of stuff in it. We did, that first book was on kind of general disability. We did a second book, which was on signs and symptoms of awareness, of autism awareness, excuse me, which is called A Spectrum of Love. And then we also did a book to help people learn what nurses do, especially our essential workers these days. This book is a really good one because it tells all the amazing things that different kinds of nurses do. So I highly recommend this one, especially now. And then we just released last year in the fall this book, which is called Down on Safari, which is about Down syndrome.
Oh my goodness.
We try in a very simple, straightforward way, probably, you know, best for kids between the ages of 3 and 8 years old, I would say, you know, learn about, different things to be, you know, again, to lead to a more inclusive world. Because when you teach them young, you know, I do book readings at schools and things like that. And we've been finding that kids really are interested. Like, they ask so many questions. They want to know, like, well, you know, if this person, you know, if I come up to this person and if I say this, is that okay? You know, and their parent, and it's good conversation with their parents, because their parents would never know to bring up anything like this until it comes to a point where, you know, we're walking down the street or somebody who says like they've got a child with cerebral palsy and people just look at them strange and tease or say something or ignore and run away because they're scared and they don't know what to say. So rather than, you know, creating this situation where it could have been such a learning opportunity right then and there to be like, it was so nice to go up to that person and say, hey, I see that you have a walker or something like that. You know, I just wanted to say hi. How much nicer is that to feel like you're accepted and that you're seen rather than that here, you know, people are going to run away from you or be afraid to talk to you. So I think the earlier that we can teach kids about those things, the better.
Well, I love how it really connects with actually the human beauty movement. I mean, there is a natural relationship there about we're as different as we are the same, and everybody wants acceptance. And I love how you're addressing it at such a young age that my kids go to, well, not anymore, but my youngest has now just moved on to middle school. But the grade school that we're in, inclusivity of everything has been such a driver with the librarians. Librarians in the Seattle area in particular have been both at a public and then at schools and then private schools and then also the Seattle Public Libraries have been getting together and talking about the fact that representation isn't showing up in libraries. Mm-hmm. And so there's been a significant push to find these kinds of books, for kids, because kids are they're interested and they want to ask questions. You look different than me. You behave different than me. I think as adults, we have predominantly, at least my mother was always like, you don't ask people why they're different. And so you grow up with this, you don't ask people why they're different. And yet that's the best part.
There's a feeling like, oh, am I just being rude? Or is it, you know, and even people will ask me today, like, I don't want to be rude, but can I ask you about your son? Like, it's not rude. It's totally fine. And certainly some people are different. Some people may have different tolerances for what's considered rude or not. But my opinion is it's better to just get it out there and say it. Like, if it's on your mind, say it. Yeah. Or ask it and don't be afraid. You can always learn something afterwards and say like, well, okay, that didn't go over very well or yay, you know, I feel really good about myself because I actually engaged and I interacted. But tell me what the name of that library is after the podcast so that I can get them some books. Yeah, we're eager to try to get these books in as many schools and as many libraries. I also send them out to hospitals so that they have them in the children's reading rooms in the pediatric or ICUs and things like that. So that, so that there's, you know, these kinds of books available for kids all over the place.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. That's super fun. I didn't expect that from okay. A couple more questions. Tell me, I want to go back to the human beauty movement here.
We are about to launch a new brand. Knock on wood, it'll all happen in August because COVID unfortunately halted a lot of production and whatnot. But we're going to be launching a brand called Humanist Beauty, which is going to be an amazing, I'm so excited about this and I'm super proud of it. It's going to be this amazing facial skincare line. The first products that I'm putting out are called Urban Wisdom CBD. It's all about full spectrum, whole hemp, the best of the best kind of CBD that you can get, and adaptogens plus amazing ingredients like, you know, various antioxidants, omegas from your coconut oil, from your avocado, from then we've got argan in there, we've got rose hip, sacha inchi, just incredible fermented Korean oils that are in there, which provide this amazing skin benefit. And so super power packed products. The first item that's going to come out is a facial oil.
Okay.
I am super, super excited about those. If you want, I have some samples of them here. I don't have full possession yet, but again, I'll keep over here because I've got everything on my shelf on the side here. But, you know, it became extremely important for me, as you can imagine, to be conscientious. And so actual packages are, you know, all corrugate on the outside. And on the inside here is the oil. This is 1 ounce, and it's 500 milligrams of CBD in this guy, which is a lot. Some brands will only give you 100. Sometimes it's just hemp seed oil, and it's not the real stuff that actually has CBD in it. So this is really, really good. The other nice thing about this is that it's already Leaping Bunny cruelty-free certified, non-GMO. There's lots and lots of organic and fair trade ingredients. Everything is 100% naturally derived. It's glass, aluminum, recyclable rubber, very minimal. I'm trying to do like no plastic. I'm moving towards a place where, because in the beauty industry, plastic is just, it's too many places, and so it's a problem. Yeah, so we are doing our best to be as plastic free as possible, even in the shipping. We also have a mini size, which is adorable. It's a half size. And then if everybody goes over right now to humanistbeauty.com, then they can sign up to get a free deluxe sample, which is like this. It's 5 mls, and so they can get this completely free before we launch in August. But if you sign up now, even the shipping, I will pay for the shipping.
Wow.
So I would encourage everybody to go there. And again, just in the spirit of inclusivity, it became important for me to try to do something above and beyond. So I decided to create these. These are biodegradable, compostable, but reusable real ID bands that you can snap on here. They have grade 2 braille on them, so that if somebody is visually impaired, they would be able to know what they're using, and then they could use this on that size, and it also fits onto the mini like that. So again, awesome. Trying to be radically inclusive.
You know, you'll have to listen to a podcast that I recorded a few weeks ago about a packaging specialist, because I asked specifically about plastics, and she said in development right now are biodegradable plastics that will biodegrade within 2 weeks after going into a landfill.
That would be amazing.
Have to be composted.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, I think about if you've got an oil, if anything has water in it, like
that's a little bit different for sure. But for shipping,
but powder packages, no problem. I mean, that would be amazing. I know that there are certain companies. I think Natura is one of them that are working on some really great technologies, and like, bring it on. You know, the whole entire beauty industry, I think a lot of industries are hungry for better solutions to the waste problem, for sure.
Tell me, tell me an interesting fact about the beauty industry that maybe those of us that aren't in the beauty industry would be like, oh, I want to share this with my, at my next cocktail hour. Do you have something fun that you can share?
Wow. Yeah, it's interesting. It's definitely an interesting question. I mean, I always find it very interesting that the beauty industry is run by a lot of people that don't know beauty. I mean, I think that that's
really. You know, okay. That's kind of interesting.
I'm sure you're familiar with it, but there are a lot of really big companies that I have worked with that are, you know, at the top levels are people that came from other industries.
Wow.
And they look at the beauty industry more as a commodity rather than for the artistic appreciation and for, you know, a lot of those other qualities that that we have. And so I think that if you look at like past advertisements, I often noticed, you know, working in the beauty industry, that there was such a difference with ads that you saw in fashion or in editorial. And then beauty, because beauty was always so photoshopped and it was always so,
yes,
like everything just looked so fakely perfect.
Yes.
And I think that there was this obsession with just like this idea and this notion of, you know, what ideal beauty would look like, or if people are scrutinizing the face, like God forbid you see a pore or a wrinkle.
Right.
Or a,
yeah.
And I'm so happy that that has been changed now, but it really started from the bottom up, not the top down. It started from people like Michelle Phan on YouTube, and people just like doing these before and afters and being able to like be okay and vulnerable showing their skin.
Yes.
Time. And so it was like, it was the young, it was the democratizing of, you know, of the beauty industry that finally kind of pulled down this idea of supermodel beauty. And now things are changing. But I always was fascinated when I would, you know, walk into a meeting and somebody would have to say, well, you know, like one of the executives would be like, well, my wife doesn't really think that. And I don't really know, but my, you know, I'm going to refer to what my wife says and make a big decision based upon what their wife thought because they didn't know any better.
that happens in this world too, as you probably have known. I've been in a number of conversations where we've had marketing leaders come in and said, well, you know, I ran this past my spouse or, yeah, and they don't like this color or they, and okay.
Okay. All
That's
right.
Interesting.
Yes.
Great.
That's a very important N of one.
Wow. Okay. Well, that was crazy. That's crazy to know. And maybe if I was to think about it, it probably is no surprise, but it's still, it would be nice if more of the VP and C-suites were people who came with that kind of background and love of beauty.
Yes. Yes. I agree. And luckily I think more and more are, and I'm really recognizing more like homegrown indie brands that, you know, it's their soul. You know, I think,
yes,
once you get to a certain size, that becomes, you know, it's a little bit different. But perhaps not. Perhaps we can keep the dream alive.
We were banking on millennials. Now we have to bank on Gen Z. Come on, Gen Z. We gotta do this.
Yeah, they're gonna save us.
Oh man. Well, before we end, I would love for you to be able to share, if people wanted to reach out to you about anything that we've talked about today, what's the best way? Do you want them to email you? You want them to approach you through the website? What's the best way?
I am on LinkedIn an awful lot, so they can certainly find me, Jennifer Norman, on LinkedIn. If they want to, you know, send me an email, I can be found at jennifer@v-hbm.com. I'd be more than happy to field any questions, answer any inquiries there. And I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Snapchat, I'm on TikTok. So
you're on it all.
I got my toe dipped in a lot of social media, so for sure.
Well, thank you so very much. And just to everybody, there you go. Another really wonderful, amazing guest and leader in the naturals and beauty industry, maybe the other way around, however you want to define it. But thank you so much for joining us today. And please feel free to share this podcast. I think this one is a really great one to share with people right now. And if you haven't already, subscribe to this channel and make sure you stay tuned to all the other great guests that we'll be bringing on board. And until next time, be well and do gooder.